That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by De Facto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 106 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 23rd of September, 2022. Faltister, I am Conal O'Moran. Don't like us. Share us. Thanks so much to all of you who have started to share, and not just like us on LinkedIn. Many of you appreciated the explanation that sharing, unlike liking, sends the podcast to all of your followers. Simple maths, 100 people with 500 followers sharing means 50,000 people will be introduced to Ireland's best business podcast by you. And that is a good thing. Now, with an audience of over 71,000, if every one of you shared, then our numbers would be simply stratospheric. Share, please. Coming up, we bring you a man capped 70 times for Ireland whose business wants to get rid of distractions, lazy questions, and unnecessary repeated work. And if you believe you don't have to like the people you work with, well, you are wrong. And if you like to run a lean company, then we will be telling you all about those staff nights out and those work golf days, that they may be a waste of your money. As always, we bring you all great tips and insights, and they are brought to you by that great Irish company, De Facto Shaving Oil, made in Mayo, sold worldwide. And they are always on the lookout for high-energy salespeople serving the worldwide grooming market. If that's you, or if you know someone that could be, get in touch with Tom Murphy, Tom at Pamex, PAMEX.ie. That is where you will find them, PAMEX.ie. Now, my first guest today lists 28 skills on his LinkedIn page, and one of them caught my attention big time. We like posh on the Great Business Show, and I don't think it comes much posher than discussing dialectic, the Socratic method. Brian McGill, boss at McGill Training, has been practicing the Socratic method for 27 years, so he must have got the hang of it by now. We may get to Socrates later, but first, I love a great debunk. And here's something Brian sent me. He says, of the cliche, you don't have to like the people you work with, because it's much, much better that if you do. He also says that those company nights out and the golf outings may all be a waste of your time and money. Brian McGill, welcome to That Great Business Show, and I hope you brought Socrates with you.
Thank you very much, Conal. I didn't expect that question to start with.
Wastes of money. We are a business. We're not a philosophy program. No. We are a business program, yeah. A business podcast, and every business owner must look at the annual or the quarterly night out or whatever and say, oh, Jesus, that's a couple of thousand quid that just cost me.
Yeah. Well, nights out, you can't sense anything wrong with nights out. Obviously, a night out is good fun, and it can often break down barriers, and it can help people get to know each other. But on their own, they don't necessarily build a great culture in a company. So you could have very poor company culture with lots of nights out and not really see any dividend from it.
But see a lot of sore heads.
You see a lot of sore heads, exactly. So it's,
So what do you do? As in, I don't mean, what do you do? We'll get onto that.
Yeah.
What does one do to build this thing called a great culture?
It probably starts with the founders of a company or the people at the very top. It would be very hard to go into, say, a very large organization and start to try and change the culture. That's a mammoth task.
But you do that.
We do that, yeah. We do try and do that. But it's better if the people at the top actually want to create a good culture. If they see the merit in, for example, looking after people. I mean, it's a very common statement, people are our most important asset. But it's not that common, actually, in practice. It's not that common in everyday business. People are important as long as they're delivering. And as soon as they stop delivering, they may cease to be important. So it's to...
And that's the truth.
Which?
The fact that people are expendable in that way, and that is how frequently, if not most times, people are dealt with.
Yeah.
You ain't performing, you're out the door, machandoris.
Yeah, and there is a certain time for that. There's no doubt about that. There's a certain time when someone's not performing, they should be out the door. But there's a lot of steps you can take before that. You could also ask, why are people not performing?
I'd love to know.
Yeah, well, sometimes people are not performing because of the person who's managing them. They're making a dog's dinner of it. There's an idea that, like with motivating people, that you have to do something to people. Whereas if you look at it, motivation is actually quite natural. People love to excel. No one gets up in the morning thinking, I hope I have a lousy day today, do as bad as possible, do as little as possible.
Now, that's interesting. I was going to ask you this question. Do as little as possible. I have come across people that spin my head because they are not interested in doing a day's work. They are lazy.
Yeah,
I can't get my head around that one.
Yeah, there may be a cohort of people in the world that are lazy. I was speaking to a chap recently and I asked him what was his vision for life, and he said to make as much money as possible, doing as little as possible. So he may very well succeed, and if that's his endeavour, so be it. But that won't build a great culture. So
it's unlikely to build a great company either.
It's unlikely to build a great company, exactly. Like if your ambition is just to make money, you know, it's a tough one, because what do you love about what you're doing? You may not love anything about what you're doing. But now, where am I? Am I?
You're on a podcast.
Oh, I know I'm on a podcast.
And you are talking about the building of a culture.
A culture, okay.
And that it has to come either from the bottom or the top.
It should come from the top down.
Okay.
Should come from the top down. It starts with your honest and sincere value of the people that you're going to employ.
Do people do that, though? I'm thinking of John runs John's company.
Yeah.
And he just needs somebody, a footman, I'm going to use an old-fashioned term here, a filing clerk.
Yeah.
Like he wants a good filing clerk, but doesn't really care. Just needs a filing clerk.
Yeah, and he'll get away with that to a point. I mean, the way you spell it out, he'll get away with that to a point. So if you just need a filing clerk. But in a way, you want people to deliver the very best that they can deliver of themselves. Now, when you use the example of filing clerk, it's not that good. But if you've got someone working in an office, in administration, you want the best administration possible. You want the least amount of hassle, the least amount of difficulties. You want the most efficient work. Now, you get all that, the most efficient work, the least amount of difficulties from people when you look after them properly. Now, there's a little bit of a looking after people properly doesn't mean being nice. It doesn't mean the things we were talking about earlier, golf outings and you know, a fridge full of food in the kitchen. That's not looking after people. It may be a part of it, but to really look after people, you really look to developing them. You look to managing them fairly and properly. You look to helping them to grow, helping them to improve. You look to educating them, etc.
But again, you've been at this for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know the reality of business is, if you're making cardboard boxes, it's about getting as many cardboard boxes out at the right price and selling them. Yeah. And then if you're putting another layer on me of having to be nice and to make sure that Mary and John are getting their education, their continuous professional development, and. Like, I want to sell boxes. If they want to go and educate themselves, good luck.
Yeah. Well, then you'd have to flip it over. And if I asked you a question or two, if I asked you, what would bring out your very best? If I were your boss, tell me, what would I have to do to bring out the best in Conal?
I'm delighted to answer that question. The more you leave me to myself, the more I will love working on my own and trying my absolute best. I am probably typical of thousands, if not millions. I want to impress people by my own brilliance or whatever.
Perfect answer. Now,
you see, now I'm happy because you told me I was perfect.
No, there's a skill. That's very good now. There is a skill where a good manager would know exactly how to make you feel like you're working on your own. And he would be very intelligent about it, and he would know exactly, or she would know exactly, how to manage you so that you feel like that. And that would be a good investment of time. How do I manage Conal where he thinks and feels and believes he's 100% on his own?
Close the door and just let me get on with it. That's basically what I want.
But most people will answer the question in a similar way, actually. Most people say things like, just let me get on with the job, or leave me to it. but not everyone is in the same place. And if you're not awake and you think it's just close the door and everyone and leave them to their own devices, you might be in for a surprise or two.
Not in a good way.
No, not in a good way. But ideally, actually, people should feel that they're working on their own. They say that people go home every evening with either one or two things on their mind. They go in the door of their home and they say to their partner or wife, they say, guess what I did today? Or guess what they did to me today? And you want the former, you don't want the latter. So you want people to feel like they're working on their own. And that's spot on, actually.
So how do you achieve that?
It's a thing called operational closeness.
No, we're into Socrates, are we?
No, not quite.
Not yet.
No, not yet. Operational closeness is knowing just how close I have to be to Conal for him to feel he's on his own. And that's a delicate balancing operation, but it's a very good operation if you get the head around it.
So talk to me. So what would you do? Take me as an example. What would you do with me?
Well, it's not so much as you would do definite things. You would get to know how you work. You would see your deliverables, what you actually deliver, and the quality of them and the standard of them. You would know what you like and what works well for you. You get to know all that, and it's a little bit of trial and error, a little bit of experiment. But you're all the time. You're not just managing in the dark. You're actually managing with a sense of purpose about getting to know what really works for you. So you wouldn't do things that make you feel micromanaged. You wouldn't do things that, you know, appear like you're being interrupted all the time, et cetera, et cetera. You would make it feel that you have autonomy. You have a good sense of endeavor and empowerment on your own.
Okay, now you are talking about an office environment. So think beyond that and talk to me beyond that in, say, retail environment.
Yeah, it would be similar. It's similar, albeit that the person is, you know, the person may be working quite some distance from their manager as such. But through meetings, regular meetings, one-to-one meetings, points of contact, you would know what a person's capable of. You would know how close you need to be to them. In fact, one of the things that's not done enough is meeting people on a one-to-one basis to really get to know them and get to know how they work and what they enjoy doing and what makes them successful, etc.
And back to this thing again is I'm trying to make boxes.
Yeah.
I haven't got time to go around to Brian McGill and hold his hand for half an hour every Monday morning.
Yeah. Now, you see, the way you're speaking about it is degrading the blooming thing. You're not going around to hold people's hands. And it's a small amount of time. There's an expression that describes this and I can never remember it. It's like you front load a little time. It's a small amount of time in the beginning. It allows for an enormous amount of production at the other end.
What would you call a small amount of time?
I would think that if I were managing a team of people and I met them once a fortnight for an hour, a good hour, for a designated hour.
Each person?
Yeah, each person.
Okay. Tony Smurfit was on this program and this podcast a year and a half, year, maybe 8 months ago. Yeah. And I can't remember, did he say that he has something like 50-odd thousand, maybe a little bit more, employees?
Yeah.
In your wildest dreams, even if he were to take his top managers,
yes,
he's not going to do an hour a week, an hour a month.
No. He couldn't do that. It's impossible. You can't really handle more than 7 or 8 people anyway, direct reports.
Okay, now that's useful. Okay.
So let's say Tony Smurfit, if you want to talk about Tony Smurfit, I'm sure he has 7 or 8 people at the top. He could certainly look after them properly. They in turn could look after their 7 or 8 and so on down throughout the company or across the company.
During COVID, he was doing daily, I think, COVID calls to people all over the world.
Yeah.
My head was kind of going, whoa.
Yeah. Mind you, I came across a case in the UK where this is a slightly different environment, but it was a school. This impressed me no end. This chap was appointed to the position of headmaster of a school, a private school in London on the Thames. And there were 200 and something students in the school. And prior to him taking his role, he interviewed every single student for 10 minutes. And I thought that was absolutely fantastic.
That's a lot of time.
It is, but it broke down barriers. It did all sorts of marvellous things in terms of him coming into the role. But I was very impressed with the idea.
Didn't happen in Clochtwood, I can tell you.
No, it didn't happen. It doesn't happen in a lot of places.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen in a lot of workplaces. A time for a person to speak and say what they think and say what they feel. and to speak honestly is not that common.
Now, call me a curmudgeon, which I am. Call me just old-fashioned, which I am. There will be in the workplace somebody who is always the moaner.
Yeah.
So do you give them equal time and or how do you get around them? Because were I a manager, and I am not a manager,
yeah,
is I couldn't bear it. I would just say, please leave me alone. I want to do my work. I can't hear your moans.
Yeah. So if you have a moaner, that's very good. So that would be part of the reason you would meet them, to stop them moaning.
But if there is some people, it's in them. You can't stop them.
You have to. No, well, that's true. It appears like you can't stop them, right? But you can create the conditions and give the necessary instructions and directions where they can stop. Now, it may come to a point where they can't stop, and you should actually be helping them to find a job where they don't moan. They'd be better off in another job, not moaning.
There are people who are uber effusive. There are other people who, by their absolute nature, are just moaners.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. There are lots of moaners by nature.
And a lot of them live in Ireland.
A lot of them live in Ireland. Maybe, maybe not. But it would be to encourage them to stop it.
Yeah. How do you do that? Do you tell them to shut up or?
No, not as brutal as that. Firstly, some people may moan and not even realize they're moaners. They may think they're not moaners. So the first thing is an awareness piece. Do you realize you're a moaner? I mean, you mightn't do it quite as bluntly as that either.
So how would you do it?
You would do it through, actually, thank you. That brings me to Socrates.
Oh, we knew we'd drag him in. And we're not talking about the footballer either.
No. Socrates, if he were here, sitting here, he would say, you assist a person to see their own shortcomings through a process of asking questions. You ask questions that help them explore, not questioning them, not necessarily challenging them. You ask questions in a sense of good faith. There's a lot of integrity to the process. Counseling is not quite the right word, but it's in that direction. You're asking questions to help a person to see that they have a trait that's not helpful. And some people take a long time to see this. Some people never see it. That's true. And you may find yourself in a position where you have to move people on because of their moanability or their moan factor.
Well, I don't know whether you're allowed to give them born the broig, as we might say, the big boot, just because they moan.
No, you wouldn't necessarily give people the boot because they moan, but you may be heading in that direction.
Okay.
And there may be other ways and means of encouraging people onwards.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRedCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy to use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRedCloud.com, 100% Irish owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
Thinking of travel? If so, make sure to make Defacto, the world's best shaving oil, your choice of travel companion. A 25-milliliter bottle of Defacto means no hassle at airports, no bulky cans to carry, and the guarantee of the world's best shave. DefactoShave.com.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
There's another one that I was told all about you, that you love talking about, and I just love this myself. So that's another lovely thing about the podcast, is I can make up whatever questions I want.
Yeah, yeah, no, I love it.
Senior managers, big bosses, who believe in themselves to a level that is unbelievable. I have met these people. Mm. They think they are God's gift. And I always think of Warren Buffett, who says, it's only when the tide goes out that you find out who's not wearing clothes or togs or whatever.
Yeah.
And there are people, and I know you've come across them, who believe in their own brilliance.
Yeah, that's true. And I have come across lots of them. And some of them actually are brilliant. That's the funny part about this. I've come across a number of the entrepreneurial type in particular, who have an air of what you're talking about. I'm extraordinary and I'm brilliant. And in a way, they have a certain brilliance about them that they've just come to believe maybe is bigger than it is or is more than it is. If it's allowed to run, they will end up in trouble. if that type of egotistical flavour is allowed to run fully, you certainly won't be building a team around you.
So who takes them by the hand? I know I'm not allowed to use that phrase or that term. Who then says to them, listen, John, Mary, you're offside here, you're full of it.
Well, they may have a good confidant. I actually do that for some people. I actually do that job for two people in particular.
Did you ever know? Obviously, we won't discuss names. This is a chat between us, Brian. But did you ever tell them, would you get up the yard, you're full of it?
No, you can't do it like that. Socrates, see, here's Socrates again. That's not how you do it.
I tell you, your job is safe because I tell you what I do.
No, but tell them. You see, that wouldn't work. Like, I have a situation at the moment, right, where the person involved is causing mayhem in his organization. And it's his own personality. It's an aggressive, arrogant personality. So I went to meet him for the very first time. And in my meeting, I probably said very little. But what I did do was just listen to him very carefully, really carefully, and try and understand where he's coming from. Try and understand something about him. Now, having not said very much, at the end of the meeting, he says, I think I could work with you.
Okay.
Now. And I said, what makes you think you could work with me? And he said, because you haven't come in here telling me what to do. So there's a way Socrates would approach something like that with great patience, a great listening skill, and saying very, very little. But it would be a genuine endeavor to try and get to understand the person.
But he has, and so he in this case, you told me, has said to you he can work with you because you don't tell him what to do.
Exactly.
But is your role not, in some fashion, to tell him not to be the big bully or the big ego that he is?
Yes, but that's not done in a telling mode. Like, if you can, telling is great when the information is positive. If I have to tell you, you're brilliant, Conal.
Oh, thanks.
And we're tripling your salary, by the way, from tomorrow.
Even better.
Yeah. And you've got extra holidays. I don't have to
worry. I love you.
Exactly. So telling is not very helpful. Is no problem in that area. If I have to tell you you're not performing very well and you need to pull your socks up, and in fact, there's a lot of issues in your particular area of work that we have to address, telling doesn't work quite as effectively. So it's a questioning approach. It's an inquiring approach, asking questions, which is Socratic dialectic. That's what it is. It's sometimes dumbed down to mean just asking questions, but it's more than that. There's asking questions is what you see the person doing, but there's a lot of other aspects to it. There's a subtle aspect of being really interested in the person, genuinely interested. You can't pretend it. You can't fake it. So it's telling doesn't work. Asking questions does.
You're probably going to hate me for asking this question, is because of the nature of the people today, we don't listen, we don't read, we don't, you know, pay a lot of attention. So I'm going to ask you, I'm putting up three fingers here. Just give me three top things, top tips. We love three top tips that businesses and business owners and business managers could do to really, really make a big difference to an organization or to a business.
I think the first I'd have to say is give people an opportunity to speak and really listen to them carefully. Yeah, give people an opportunity to speak and listen to them carefully. I would say, do you mean specifically with the people end of it, like my end of it or other, apart from that?
If you have a magic wand and you can make businesses better, all ears are listening to this podcast.
Oh, I see.
Trying to make the businesses better.
Okay.
And if it's free or cheap, easy or quick, you'll have a bigger audience.
Well, connect everyone in the organization to the purpose of the organization. That's a big one.
How'd you do that?
Well, firstly, you have, does the person at the top have vision? What is the vision for this business? And is that vision so alive and so exciting and so interesting that everybody in the organization knows about it?
Now, you say alive and exciting.
Yeah.
You're making cardboard boxes. Sorry, Tony. Tony Smurf,
no, he makes
cardboard
boxes.
Is, like, can you make that exciting?
You can. You can make the most exciting and best cardboard boxes in the world. It depends on how you speak about it, how you see it, how you look at it. You could, you can make any job exciting. Now, you've got to have the right people in the right slot. But if they're connected to vision, That's a, and connected to the purpose of what they're doing. That's marvelous. That's one of the most important things, actually.
Now, what do you do? Do you bring them into a room, or do you put up a pie chart or a chart or
It's a combination of things. It would happen in from the very day you recruit the person. They would know the vision and purpose of the company. It would feature in all the different points of contact in the company. So every time you have a one-to-one meeting or a team meeting or a group meeting, this vision would be on your lips all the time. It's not something that's written on a, you know, on a chart on the wall. You know, it's not a mission statement that people don't remember, if you know what I mean, that kind of idea. This is a real, the more the vision is real and the more people are connected to it, the better. Connected to purpose, that's tip number two. So I'd say tip number one is listening. Tip number two is connect every single person to purpose. There's a story, I never quite know if this story is true or not. But
I love those ones best.
I don't know if it's true. I don't mind if it's not true because it makes the point. You have an American president visiting Cape Canaveral, and he's walking down the line of all the staff are lined up, all the staff from the very senior personnel to the people looking after the facilities. And the president's being introduced to them all, you see. And he comes to this young man whose job it is to clean the lavatories. And the president says to him, "What do you do here, young man?" He said, "Mr. President, I put men on the moon." Now, that's connecting everyone to purpose.
Okay, I get that.
When the janitor in the place thinks that he is part of the big job,
the team,
that's connecting them to purpose.
So let me go the other end.
Yeah.
Three top tips what not to do.
Never ever do.
Or maybe what was the worst thing you've ever seen a company do?
I think it's got to be something in the area of paying lip service to things is a big one. I see a lot of that and the trouble it causes. Really seek to, yeah, so paying lip service to anything, you'd be nearly better off not having values than pretending you have them.
But do you remember, or maybe you don't remember, do you remember Gerald Ratner, the jeweller, who went on to, he made a speech for on TV, this is quite some years ago now, and he referred that he sold tat. And he destroyed his company. And I think Ernest Saunders did almost the same thing to Guinness once upon a time.
I see.
There are CEOs, Ratner owned, Ratner was on there above the door. Ernest Saunders was the CEO of Guinness at the time. That people, I don't know whether, again, you're going back to this thing of losing the run of themselves, but they can make statements about their companies which are destructive.
Not destructive, yeah, they could. I must say, I'm not too familiar with a number of those, but certainly pretending the company's about something that it's not, pretending there are values, you know, the good talk, but not really, it's not real. That would be a serious trouble spot. Your questions about what not to do. I suppose undervalue things like the culture, undervalue things like values, undervalue all of that area. It's often really very badly called, you know, all the softer end of business, this idea that it's soft. It's actually the most important part of business. Every business has people in it.
That's interesting that you say that. I had once upon a time a radio producer called Ruth Devaney, and she taught me all of the above, is that people want to hear about the soft stuff. And I'm thinking, no. I had a stockbroking background. I said they only want to see pounds, shillings and pence.
No.
So what you're saying to me is I'm wrong, she's right.
I'm saying you're wrong, she's right, definitely.
Yeah, I hate you more now.
if you think of who you want to work for yourself, who you want to work with all day, who you marry, who you want to live with. You don't want to be with people that are awkward, difficult and troublesome. You want people who you get on well with and work well with. And you can do that in a company. You can select in and recruit properly and really get people who are aligned more together than in other situations and less of the kind of ad hoc arrangement. You can set out to establish a company with good values and good principles and attract people to join that network. You can do that, definitely.
This is left of field because I'm just thinking aloud as I listen to you. In office, out of office, what would your advice be? Because we had Creona Turley of Capella on the podcast and they advise about whether people should go hybrid or not or whatever. Mm. And she says the days of the office full-time are over.
Mm.
Discuss.
I would think the days of the office are full-time are over. Mm-hmm. However, there's some obvious jobs that does not apply to. And I think where people, if people want to try and take advantage of the fact that the business culture is changing, but if their job doesn't allow for it, they shouldn't really be trying to think that way. So hairdressers can't work from home. It's simple.
It would in my head.
Yeah.
They could stay in the bath.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? There are certain jobs. I came across an organisation recently where there's a lot of laboratories involved and the majority of the work is testing and sampling, etc. And some of the people there are talking about working from home. That's just not possible.
Okay.
So there may be, it may be possible to spend some time at home on the administrative end of their work, but a huge part of their work is laboratory based.
So go back to those who will, can work from home and will do 3 days a week or whatever at home. Big challenge to get out of what you're talking about, culture, good aims, good things across to people.
It could be an additional hurdle. That's true. Mm-hmm. It could be an additional hurdle. And you'd have to, you'd have to monitor that carefully and make sure that it doesn't become too fragmented and doesn't become too disparate and away from what you're trying to create.
And how do you do that?
You'd have to bring them in on occasions.
Okay, so you wouldn't do it by Zoom?
You could do a mixture Zoom. I work with a company at the moment where I meet some teams on Zoom and then every quarter.
But it's a different dynamic, isn't it? I hate it.
I must say, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. It can be very efficient. If the people know each other and know each other well, it can be very efficient. So, for example, if I'm meeting, as I am at the moment, I'm meeting a couple of clients in particular from a startup situation, I will meet them face to face first. So you wouldn't introduce the whole concept on Zoom. But it's very hard to come down on the side of this is the definite way to do things. It's much more of a moving feast, especially currently. There's a certain amount of things that are very effective online. Some things aren't. I find it very helpful and very good. I've just gone from driving about 40,000 miles a year to 5.
That is brilliant.
Yeah, I know.
Very sustainable.
Yeah, very sustainable.
That's good. I like that. Question. Who advises Brian McGeough? Who holds your, I know I'm not allowed to say it again, but I will. Who holds your hand or who says to you, you're on the right track, on the wrong track?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. I have
I love people saying that.
But it
you
is.
You can say that again.
No, it is a very, very, very good question, Colin. I have to keep myself in check. That sounds solo run, but that is the way it is. So I spend, I'm a very early riser.
How early is early?
5 or before.
Would you?
Or before it.
Okay, but do that mean you go to bed early?
Not necessarily. I go to bed at about 10:30 or 11 most nights. There may be the odd variation on that, but generally speaking, it's by 11. I would be generally up out of the bed at somewhere between 4:30 and 5:30.
Oh, jeez, you said 5, now it's 4:30.
Well, it would vary slightly.
Do you know those things about day in the life? Yeah. Fellas who get up before they go to bed.
Yeah, no.
Begin to sound like that.
Well, it is interesting that there's very few spiritual gurus, sports gurus, business gurus, political gurus who advocate sleeping in. There's none, actually.
Mrs. Thatcher was a great believer. And my dad, he didn't sleep either.
You get up early. Now, you see the way you say that. It's not that you don't sleep. We could have a discussion about that someday. It's that you get up at the right time. You get up early.
Yeah.
Like the only creature that doesn't get out of bed when he wakes up in the morning is the human being.
Yeah.
The birds don't wake up and say, flip this, I'm not singing today. They get up and they start singing.
Okay.
We lie in the bed for a bit too long usually.
Not me.
So you could get up earlier. Yeah. I get up early. And I spend about an hour and a half to 2 hours before I go anywhere near my desk. And I would be reading and studying and informing myself during that time and meditating during that time.
Wow.
Every morning.
In the dark.
You mean it's outside? I have lights in my house. You do you not have lights? I have lights, electric things, you know, the bulbs hanging.
In the middle of winter, you're getting up at 4:30, yeah?
Even more so then, sure, it's beautiful. And the summer.
Oh, the summer's nice. Okay. So back again. So what do you do after that?
I then begin work. But I use time every day to study, read my subject. And then I would also attend things like I attended a summer school in Greece during the summer on Plato and Socrates.
But of course.
Which was immersing myself in that subject for 8 days in the north of Greece.
By Zoom?
No. No, physically.
Oh, sorry. You went there.
I went there.
Okay. Yeah.
So I would keep myself abreast of my subject through study.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were, this is part of getting up at, for 2 hours in the morning or whatever. No, yeah. No, I'm missing it. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
It's okay. So there were opportunities for me to study and keep abreast of myself. You're asking me, how do I keep a track of myself? It's that
No,
way.
I was asking you, who advises you? Or does anybody?
No, I don't have an advisor in the way that I think you mean.
Mentor?
No, I don't have a mentor.
Somebody to keep you grounded?
No, keep myself grounded.
But you're advising other people to use you as their grounder.
That's right.
Grinder.
A grounder. No, I don't. I don't have a grounder in the way that I think you mean. No, yeah. I don't.
That's interesting. Who would you, final question that we always ask everybody, who would Brian McGill hire in a heartbeat?
In a heartbeat. Ah, dear. I think...
At least you got the email. A lot of other people don't seem to get the email. No. And if they do, because they all do, they don't read them.
We don't hear in a heartbeat. That's terrible, isn't it, that you can't come up with an answer? No,
it's very funny. Yeah. In broadcast, the hardest thing is to, we call it white noise or to go dead air. The hardest thing to do is to let somebody not talk and not interrupt. No. But it's very telling. And I'm loving it that there is this dead air of you thinking... Because you're going to come up with the best answer ever. This is number 106. You could be the number one of 106 people, or sorry, 106 episodes, so it must be 400 people who have given a view as to who their hire in a heartbeat is.
Who would I hire in a heartbeat?
You're allowed to say dead people, so Socrates, would you hire him?
I would definitely hire Socrates. I would definitely hire him, but...
He'd be a number one choice, would he?
I would think, I mean, if Socrates were alive today... I would definitely hire him. But I do, in a way, hire him. I eat, sleep and drink him and study him and work with him all the time.
Clever boy he was.
Very clever.
Is there anybody still living whose books, I don't read business manuals, business books at all, but billions, if not more, do read them. Do you read them? And is there anybody of those type that you think is, well, he's good or she's good?
I haven't read business books recently, and you're not going to like the next bit of this answer. I read a fantastic book, absolutely outstanding book, which I would actually recommend to everybody.
Yes, please.
And it's about character, and it's called The Road to Character.
Okay.
And it's the author is a journalist from the United States. I can't remember his name, but it's an outstanding book. And it talks about character building in a very, very accessible and interesting way. It's a magnificent book.
Well, I shall find the reference and I shall post the reference onto the LinkedIn page for this episode. And if people would, because I keep asking them, share. It's very important to share your LinkedIn. So they will be sharing with this US journalist, The Road to Character.
Yeah.
And we will make the world a better place, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Brian McGill. Thank you so much for joining us on that great business show.
Thank you very much.
Make one small switch. Switching from shaving foam to all-natural De Facto shaving oil will give you the smoothest, softest shave ever. Switching from shaving oil to De Facto helps stop 20 million non-recyclable shaving foam cans go to landfills every year. Switching from shaving oil to De Facto will save your skin, your pocket, and your planet. DeFactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Rates and sent invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
That great business show.
Before my next guest, I just want to give Kilkenny Design a shout out. You'll know that Kilkenny's CEO, Evelyn Moynihan, joined us on episode 91. She told us that Kilkenny only carries Irish-made goods, so if you are a creator of anything saleable that's Irish, you should give them a shout, especially as Christmas approaches. And she did say they do want to hear from you. And I mentioned that C word because Kilkenny will, for the second year, have a pop-up shop at Kildare Village from the end of September to January next. So when you shop with them, you're keeping it local, and that is a good thing. And so to my second guest. He hates distractions, lazy questions, and unnecessary repeated work. That attitude is probably what made Andrew Trimble one of our best ever rugby players, lining out for Ireland 70 times before retiring from the game 4 years ago. Well, life goes on after professional sport, and Andrew is now CEO of Kairos Sports Tech, a sports software platform that offers scheduling tools, performance and health analytics. And the company has to date raised £2 million sterling. They have clients across 10 sports in 12 countries, and this includes teams in major sports leagues such as the Premiership or Premiership Rugby, the Premier League and the NBA. Andrew Trimble, welcome to That Great Business Show.
How are we getting on? Thanks for having me.
This is the home of the ladies. Lazy question.
The home of the ladies.
How long has it taken me to get you here?
I don't know, close to a year.
I'd say well over a year. I'd say back in the day when Jamie Heaslip used to present, the idea was to have you down here to talk rugby. Fortunately for the listeners, we ain't talking rugby. Do you miss it?
I generally don't miss it. I miss the boys, I miss the crack, I miss the slagging, I miss all that stuff. But I don't miss getting my head kicked in at the weekend. I don't miss the travel. I don't miss the commitment, the professionalism. I don't miss the fact that your life isn't your own and the stress that comes with that, and the stress of the expectation of performance levels and how public scrutiny or even just any scrutiny from teammates or coaches or journalists, anything. It's very, very stressful. There's a lot expected of athletes, and there's a lot of stuff I don't miss. I just miss the boys. Pure and simple, just miss the crack with the lads.
Well, let me tell you a little secret, and you've already been doing this for 4 years. You now have shareholders. You now have shareholder expectation. You now have the scrutiny of the media on the business side. So nothing's changed.
I'd like to imagine. I like to think that our shareholders are a lot less fickle than rugby supporters.
You can imagine that.
I can drop the ball every now and again or make a mistake.
If you don't make them money, there will be, there you'll see what fickle really means and what angry fickle means.
Our shareholders back us, you know, as anybody says, but any kind of early stage investment, you're not necessarily investing in the business or the solution, you're investing in the founders and the business and the people. And we got people that backed us and really support us and are very, very good to us. So potentially that might change, and they may become as fickle as rugby supporters. But at the minute, they're happy with what we're doing, and they've got a lot of support behind us.
And you have a global business. We have a global audience. We have people listening to us in South Africa, in America, in Australia, New Zealand, yada yada yada. Start selling to them. What will Kairos do for them? What will Kairos do for their favorite sport, team sports?
Yes, yeah, so Kairos mightn't do that much for them individually, but it actually, to be fair, if they are the fickle supporters of sports teams, then they may become a little bit happier with the performance of some of the players in the teams that we're working with. But my experience of being in that environment, high performance environment, you know, high expectations. There's a lot of different departments, a lot of different difficult communication and clutter communication. And whenever you think of the typical profile of a high performance athlete, it's someone who's single minded, who's focused, who's just hell bent on performance at the weekend, removes all distractions and just concentrates on that. But actually the way we behave with our athletes is we just push and pull them left, right and centre, and we distract them.
Talk to me about that, because as you can see, I'm a professional athlete.
Politics got in the way.
What are those pushes and pulls? Obviously, I've never seen it. I've never experienced it. Typically, what's it like?
It can be quite a... there can be quite clumsy mechanisms of communication to athletes, and there can be, we've spoke to football teams, rugby teams, where they've got 10, 15, 20 different WhatsApp groups in the club. They've got a whiteboard for medical appointments. They've got a written S&C program. They've got S&C strength and conditioning program, gym program. And they've got flip charts for, you know, tactical strategic information about the games. They've got PDFs for travel. They've got kind of redrafted, reissued and published PDFs into a different WhatsApp group. So it can be quite cluttered. And the thing is with athletes, they're They're extremely good at one thing. They're spiky. They're not well-rounded. They're not necessarily the... I know I played with guys who didn't have a laptop. You know, they're not necessarily guys who deal with admin that well always.
Not a laptop. Are you serious?
Yeah. So they just need everything in their hand. They need everything in one app, and they need everything just really easy and simple to digest. They consume the important information, and then they just get back to doing that one thing that they do very well, and that's performance or training. And we can get them back to being single-minded and focused again.
So when you were thinking, because you've got a co-founder with you, when the two of you were thinking through on this app, presumably it was your learnings particularly, what was it was like for you and what you saw as the problems.
Yeah, exactly. And that was that set us in very generally the right direction. And it was my thoughts, my assumptions and my take on that high-performance environment and the communication problems and solution that kind of generally shaped that. Probably one of the misunderstandings I made at the start was I said, okay, the athlete is the center of the universe for a team. The athlete is the performer. Let's make everything about improving the environment for the athlete. But what I didn't, not that I didn't realize, I probably just didn't realize it was close to as important, is that everybody's a performer, not just the person on the pitch, not just the guy scoring goals, scoring tries. You know, the physio is a performer, the strength and conditioning coach is a performer, the operations staff, they're performing their role, and their role to them is just as important, and they're contributing to that team effort in the same way. So we needed to solve problems for them. That probably led to our development time being probably twice as long as we expected it to be, along with a couple of other reasons. The typical rules of product development don't apply when you're selling to elite professional sports teams.
Why not?
Because the typical model is get MVP, get it in the market, get some feedback, iterate the product, improve the product, and then get some more feedback and let the market dictate what this product looks like ultimately. But that doesn't, if you do that to say your first year beta partner is Manchester United, I can tell you who you won't be working with in a year's time if they get MVP. No one wants to be the canary in the coal mine.
MVP is minimum viable product, just for those who are listening. Do you know what I'm making? You're making me laugh. You're sounding like a founder, a CEO of a tech company.
I'm bluffing. We're all, you know what I
you
realize?
You sound very good. Keep going.
You know what I realize whenever I finished playing rugby? I got into the real world, the afterlife, we would have called it. And I think I always would have been intimidated by the afterlife, thinking all these people, thinking all these different industries, there's a whole world out there that I know nothing about. And you know, and I'm just bluffing here. You know what I realized maybe about a year into retirement? I am bluffing. You know what? Everybody else is bluffing more than me.
And you sound good. Now, you did captain rugby team, so therefore you know how to give a good shout. Keep going now. I'm very impressed so far. So you go to, are you actually working with Manchester United by any chance?
Because yes, you are working exactly. With some of the big ones. I hoped you'd pick up on that. Yeah, I left the bait for you there and you went for it. Manchester United have been a really amazing partner of ours.
How did you get in there in the first place?
Honestly, I actually can't. I don't think I can tell you the story. Sorry, I can. You know, I can actually. We were supposed to. This is quite a long-winded story, actually. So bear with me here. We were trying to get a call and a demo and a touch base with the head of technology at Chelsea at the time, and I had emailed him a couple of times, no reply. Emailed him again. I said, is there any chance we could get a call next week? And he said, I'm actually at a technology conference in Barcelona, connected to the Nou Camp in Barcelona. And this is back in the days when we were in offices. This is pre-COVID. I looked over at my business partner and I said, conference in Barcelona next week, that tech conference, we'd looked at that. Do you fancy going to Barcelona? He goes, yeah, fine. So I replied to him straight away. We're actually at that conference.
Oh, brilliant. Well done. Clever.
This is Chelsea, right? Yeah. This is Chelsea, by the way. I'm trying to get him to Chelsea. And he said, he didn't reply for a couple of days. And then it's like the day before, I'm going, right, I'm actually, this could be a wasted journey. He emails us and says, actually, I can't make it anymore. So all of a sudden, now we're in this position where we're going to this conference without the whole point in being at the conference. So, like, well, anyway, we'll try and get what we can from it. Hopefully learn a few things, hopefully make a few connections. And when we were there, we were at the buffet one day, and my business partner recognized a guy that we'd met from Manchester United before. And a guy called Chris Chang. I can't remember how that original connection was made, but it wasn't a close relationship. We spent the evening with Chris Chang. We went for drinks. We went for food. Got on like a house on fire. Shared the vision with him about what we were looking to do. And nothing happened overnight, but we had an ally and we had someone who was an advocate for us and for what we were doing and was quite excited about the big vision. So we worked quite closely with Chris. He introduced us to other guys at the club. And then probably it was about a year and a half later, we were working with the academy.
Year and a half. That's a long time.
Long time. But this is only the academy. Then we were working with the academy from last summer, summer 21. And it kind of demonstrates the value of Keros, the fact that the product at that stage was ready. If we'd got in at the time, we always would be ambitious, over ambitious, and say, yes, absolutely, this product's going to solve problems. But I'm not sure we would have kind of reflected, you know, not sure we would have done ourselves justice. Whereas we bided our time and we did it at the right time, whenever we were ready to deliver value, whenever the product was at that good stage. And we got it in. We started changing the way the Manchester United Academy operate and the way they communicate. And
what was the feedback there? And how did you, you know, have you proven to them that they're 10% or 400% better?
Yeah, it's very difficult to get metrics on that. Most of it's qualitative, most of it's feedback and anecdotal. But the anecdotal feedback has been very strong, to the point where recently we were in a room with we then managed to sell vertically within that account. We now are working with the ladies team at Manchester United, and then the final piece of the puzzle is the first team. And only a few weeks ago we had a meeting with a number of academy staff and a number of senior staff. Obviously, the academy staff were effectively doing the pitching for us because they had a really good experience of the platform. And then we got sign-off and now we're working with
we're
with Manchester United first team.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's a long way around and all started from us going to Barcelona.
So from
on
start,
a fool's errand.
Start to the close of the first team took you how long?
if that's your typical sales cycle, it's a very inefficient business, so hopefully it speeds up a good bit, but it was...
Is that 3 years?
Could be 3 years, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just trying to remind people is to keep at it because it can pay huge dividends. Mm-hmm. And I presume now you have Manchester United emblazoned all over the website and therefore it's a calling card and things begin to snowball.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the big thing. If obviously if it's good enough for kind of the message we're delivering, if it's good enough for Manchester United, it's good enough for your team, and that doesn't always land because we want to work with other teams that aren't considered in the same category. They're technically the same, but they're not in terms of budget, in terms of prestige, in terms of process and everything. We're working with. So this time last year, we were working with a couple of football academies in England. And really, I think we only had one first team, that was Brentford. Now we've got nine Premier League teams and a mixture of first teams and academies and women's teams. So that was the first market that we kind of, you know, made strides to get into. Just it's on our doorstep and we had a few connections in there. And
But even those connections didn't seem to deliver too quickly, did they?
No, absolutely. But in a way, we were well served, and it kind of tested our resilience, I suppose. And if we, I'm certain of it now, if we had got in when the product wasn't ready, we would have done ourselves a disservice. Bide your time, wait for the right opportunity. It's very difficult to turn down an opportunity, so I don't think we ever did. So we probably burned a few bridges maybe in the early days, but generally, you know, most of the big names and the big teams and the big logos came on at the right time whenever we were ready to deliver value.
Reminds me of a term that I've adopted from Jamie Heaslip, gradually, then suddenly. Uh-huh. I love that. I don't know why it resonates with me, but I love it anyway, and I've been using it as well, so thanks, Jamie.
It's nice. So the kind of smaller version of this is Manchester United Academy, and if you deliver value there, then you get that land and expand within one account, within one club. And then the slightly bigger version is, okay, you got one Premier League team and now you've got 8-9 Premier League teams, and hopefully that can be the same on a bigger scale as well, in terms of getting into new markets, NBA, NHL. Just in the last couple of weeks, we've just got our first NHL team and NBA teams. So,
and are they different in the way that they approach life and the, you know, the fact that they are sure positive that the NHL and the NFL people do all use laptops. In fact, they will probably sleep with their laptops.
Yeah, they definitely do behave differently. What we've discovered is that we tried to dictate a little bit too much, maybe to the club at the start. We used to say, here's your event types, here's your something else, here's the way you want to, you know, set up your account. And it was quite rigid. Then what we realized was, you know, different teams value different things and they behave in a slightly different way. And it reminds me a little bit of during COVID, the British government would have announced something and then we would have waited a couple of days and then the Northern Ireland executive would have announced something slightly different. You know why they did that? Just to display, we've got our own autonomy and we can do it. And then we would have heard something from Dublin, slightly different, Scotland, slightly different, Wales. And I think teams operate in a similar way. They say, like, for example, one team that we work with, and I'll say who they are, but they host the one piece of data that they find really important is what type of cars that the players drive. So they keep that on file.
Why?
I don't know, but it's a strange thing, but they value that. We say, fine, no problem, keep that.
How bizarre.
Yeah, so we actually, in terms of the player database that we allow them to store and host, we don't actually dictate the field types. We just say, listen, host whatever information you want. We're going to make this. And then all of a sudden, then instead of us selling, you know, saying, here's an off-the-shelf product, you can either fill out the field on the type of car that the players drive or don't fill it out. We can say, listen, we want this to be your product. We want this to be the Manchester United app that we want. We're going to color code this. It's all white labeled, logoed. The event types are exactly the way you want them. The bespoke data, it's a customized app. So all of a sudden, the athletes feel more special. This is specifically built for us. That's the feel.
And my car.
And my car, yeah. So it's a lot more powerful and you get a lot more compliance from athletes and players and staff members feel more special, I think.
And you've been at this for 4-odd years, so you've obviously done the maths on it. How big is the opportunity?
The opportunity, I mean, we did loads of work on this in the past and, you know, total addressable market size and serviceable addressable market. And I got weary with numbers, to be honest.
Is it big?
It's big enough. It's big enough. I don't think we'll be a unicorn, if that's what you're asking. But it's big enough for there to be a big opportunity and to attract some investment.
And you're at 20 odd at the moment, are you, in terms of staff?
Yeah, we've got some kind of hybrid staff and we've got some part-time kind of consultants, but yeah, probably around 16, 17.
And you've raised the 2 million. Will you go again?
We might go again. Obviously, the way things are at the minute, there's a lot of uncertainty around there and we're starting to be quite...
How are you seeing that? people not returning calls?
No, because we're not actively looking for investment at the minute anyway.
No, I mean, like in terms of uncertainty, say on expansion, if you are looking to go into further into either Premiership or further into NFL, NHL, NBA, any of those ends, that continues, does it?
Absolutely continue to expand and continue to drive as much growth as we can.
Well, you see now there's a confusion there for me because I listen and read and see the same thing that you do about uncertainty in the economically. Mm-hmm. But businesses like yours don't stop. They haven't stopped. Mm-hmm. So they continue.
Yeah, but you might have to take a different route than you otherwise would have. So the venture route is one route. And but the thing is, you're totally reliant on there being an appetite out there for investing in a business like ours. Whereas if we stay a little bit leaner for a little bit longer, we can still, you know, build a really compelling business and we can still, you know, make big strides and get big logos and, you know, kind of create a decent kind of revenue model there and just build on that SaaS model year on year. But we can do it with the controllables. You know, we don't have to necessarily rely on someone for that. So I think we're probably leaning towards the latter. If we do bring in any more funding, it'll be someone strategic, someone who's going to be influential for us in the market. We've got the Ricketts family, the owners of the Chicago Cubs, invested in Keros. And
how did you get them?
We did a TechStars sports accelerator in Indianapolis last summer, 21. And they're just part of that TechStars network. And that's been really important for us to really level up and get an understanding of how influential that network can be.
Was that great?
It was amazing. It was very good. It was very stressful, I must say. It was, they put you under a lot of pressure and they...
Oh, come on, you've played for Ireland. Come on. Yeah, stress? Yeah.
A similar level. Like they shared with you at the start, I didn't enjoy that stress. So.
And is there a Mr. Ricketts or Mrs. Ricketts or is it Rickett or Ricketts?
Ricketts, the Ricketts family.
Uh-huh. Did you meet with them?
No, we didn't. So we work with, what we did actually is the second generation of the Ricketts family. They're doing their own thing and they manage that investment fund. Startups like ours, small ticket size, but you know they'd be interested in being a part of something in the future as well.
And they introduce and they open doors, I presume.
Absolutely. So baseball is, you know, is a big opportunity in the next coming months. It's going to be very important for
us. I've got to ask you this question: do you understand baseball?
probably more than I understand cricket.
Really? Cricket is very easy. I cannot get my head around baseball.
Oh, really? I thought baseball would be more simple than cricket.
So what's next for you?
I suppose for us, it's trying to operate that lean model, but also get that access. So rather than, you know, bringing in expensive sales reps, you know, we're working with introducers or guys who are in transition. You know, I love working with sports people. I love working with guys who are maybe, you know, interested in tech or interested in that transition. And so building out that team and streamlining a lot of our processes. I think we're probably just coming out of that stage where everything's hustle. Everything's get on a flight to Barcelona and meet someone and go for food with them. Like that sales process is nowhere near sustainable enough. So we're trying to be really sustainable and really just get our processes in place. And some of that's boring. Some of that's just managing our CRM to make sure everybody communicates clearly. There's no duplication. Everybody's presenting Keros the same way. Our process is consistent. A lot of slightly boring stuff. I don't find it boring because I'd be quite nerdy like that. So I just like the idea of us becoming, rather than, you know, five individuals in a sales team and then five engineers in an engineering team, I like the idea of us becoming like a sales machine, just churning out that process. But at the same time, a big thing that's unique about us is the fact that they know me, they know Gareth, they know Connor, they know the whole team, and I know everybody in Orlando Magic. I know everybody in that room. I know eight people. I know they've got their phone numbers. I know exactly what makes them tick. We can't be like that in 2 or 3 years' time, hopefully. It could be a good problem to have. But at the minute, we can be small, we can be agile, we can really intimately know our customers. So it's about just getting that balance of having robust processes, but also having that personal touch and making sure you know your customers.
And you say you're nerdy. Not many people may know this about you, but you actually studied physics for a while.
I did. I studied the unique combination of physics, theology, and finance.
Okay.
the three circles in a Venn diagram which generally don't cross.
Okay, I like that. So what can we call ourselves? Team GBS. There are loyal listeners, so you are now joining Team GBS. I put that up about Jack McGrath many years ago a bit when he was joining Team SBS, and I think that Leinster, when he was playing with them, almost passed out. They thought he had left. He had left them without telling them. You've now joined Team GBS. What could Team GBS worldwide do for you?
Is your network?
Correct.
I suppose what we found, actually, you know, what was a pretty compelling sales process for us, our strategic kind of route for us, was finding a strength and conditioning coach or a performance coach with an Irish accent. In Australia, in the States, we are everywhere. You wouldn't believe how many Irish practitioners and coaches and VPs and we're everywhere. So that Irish diaspora and that Irish network is very strong. So anybody who can introduce us, make a connection for us in terms of into the market and in terms of customers or anybody who, you know, could be helpful in terms of distribution or anything like that, that would be really, really useful.
Are you with the Ireland hockey team?
We are, actually. We just
Because Susan Spence is sometimes co-hosts this with me, and she is Softco, and the Softco sponsors both men and women now.
Okay, we've been working with the men for the last 6 months, and we've just brought on the women's team.
Katie Mullen.
Katie Mullen.
She's
fantastic. Here in my, she's from where I'm from. She's in the North Coast.
And she is one bright lady, I tell you. You can actually see the old cogs going away there. So what other games that you feel are ready for you?
Oh, well, we're getting into motorsport is an interesting one.
Yeah, it's interesting. Go on.
We've had conversations with Williams, McLaren, IndyCar.
Did you find any Irish people in there?
No, we didn't actually. We broke the model for that one. IndyCar, a motorsport company in Australia. I can't remember the name of now, but anytime we've done this quite a bit. The typical model is to break into a market and then just go really deep and just saturate that market. But we seem to be skimming the surface of a number of markets.
There's a woman called Nikki Daly, mm-hmm. and I have tried even longer than you to get her on here. She's got a wonderful, wonderful program aimed at young women, 15, 16-year-old. It's called Formula Female, and it's to get them into motorsport. Nikki Daly's uncle and dad were both Formula One drivers and in the 500 drivers. I'm going to introduce you to Nikki Daly and see whether she can make introductions for you into motorsport.
Excellent. That'd be great.
And, I'm also trying to get her on here. So, Nikki, I'm coming after you again. She's got a lot of emails from me, I can tell you. So that's one thing we can do. Anything else?
Yeah, just continue to be advocates for what we're doing. I mean, we work with other, work closely even just today, you know, caught up with another Irish sports tech company called Locker. They wanted to kind of pick my brains a little bit on the rugby market and how to get in front of rugby fans and what way do rugby fans think. So I was able to give them hopefully a little bit of insight there. But they did Techstars Sports Accelerator in Indianapolis the year before. So that was kind of the connection why we did it. I just think it's great, you know, Irish people looking out for Irish people and just backing each other up and just helping each other out.
We like. Now, final question to you. I hope you got the email. We ask the final question. Who would Andrew Trimble hire in a heartbeat? Say you did get the email, please.
I did get the email, yeah, but I forgot to come up with a firm conclusion. It's someone who doesn't exist, ultimately, really. It's... for us, because we have so many hybrid roles and because we're so small and gritty and because we're in hustle mode, sometimes I'm in product development, sometimes I'm managing finance, sometimes I'm in sales. So it's someone who can do all of those things ultimately. Who would that be the equivalent of? I'm trying to think of like a rugby player who's played five different positions. Who would that be? Someone like Dennis Leamy played in the back row. It's a terrible example.
Okay, well, I mean, that's fine. Some other people haven't even come up with answers for me and I'm still a little bit annoyed about them.
Oh, really? They just sat in silence here?
There was one person now, very recently, I can't remember who it was, but they did give a really good answer. But what they were saying was, the point was to hire anybody who's not you and who thinks differently. Mm. And they said, we now have a very large number of Ukrainians welcome to our shores. And he or she, whoever, said, hire a Ukrainian. So that's maybe you should... Maybe you should put up a Ukrainian page onto your website and hire them.
Yeah,
and bring into the East. Big, a lot of sports being played out in the Eastern Europe. Uh-huh. So there you go. Andrew, it is a real pleasure to finally have got you in here. You are welcome again anytime. Hopefully it won't be another year or year and a half or 2 years. I think it's actually closer to 2 years. Andrew Trimble, thank you for joining
us. Thank you very much.
On That Great Business Show. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 106. And I won't ask again, but do please press the share button on your LinkedIn. Or if you're listening on Spotify, etc., send it on to your mates on WhatsApp. They will thank you for it. And the big question for your business, why are you not advertising with us? Big Red Cloud does, as have Microfinance Ireland, Virgin Media, Udros Nugatukta, and others. We deliver a truly engaged business audience at incredible value for money prices. We record here at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where sound engineer Mark McCarthy and studio manager Peter Rice create the true sound of business. If you want to record a podcast, use the team here at the Dublin South Podcast Studios. I vote for them every week. And if you would like the Media Group to produce a podcast for your business, then talk to me, Conal O'Moran. Find me on LinkedIn. And before I forget, Andrew Trimble, you also should be promoting your podcast. Give it a shout out there.
Okay. Potholes and Penguins is the name of our podcast. It's probably an alternative look at the rugby from the weekend. If we speak for an hour, we might talk for 10 minutes tops about rugby. The rest of the time, we'll talk about whatever lads talk about, make fun of each other, make fun of current rugby players, and generally just have a bit of chit-chat. So,
and the name comes from?
Oh, this is a long one. Penguins came from a Game of Thrones reference. Varys from Game of Thrones liked to have his birds in every different part of the kingdom. feeding back gossip and information to him. So we call our listeners our penguins. Our penguins are very loyal. We wanted a slightly less complimentary bird. So we thought penguin, kind of clumsy bird that can't even fly. We thought that would be a nice way of making fun of our listeners. So, and pothole. A pothole is someone, basically, whenever you're playing rugby, it's an old supporter puts his arm around you in the bar after the game and tells you what you've done right and what you've done wrong. Pothole is someone you try and avoid. So potholes and penguins.
Okay, moving on. All of the great business insights, including that from Andrew Trimble, and the tips are brought to you, as always, thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best all-natural shaving oil. They back us, please back them. DeFactoShave.com will get them. And do not forget to buy Business Plus magazine, where we now have our regular column all about the podcast. So from me, Conal Moran, Míle buíochas for listening. Agus slán tamall.